The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check our additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management. It's time to bring out the Better Worldian in all of us. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio with your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. Better Worldians Radio inspires you with the people and ideas that are making the world a better place. You'll hear how small acts can make a big difference every day. Now, here are Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory.
Hi, this is Ray Hansel. Welcome to Better Worldians Radio. Better Worldians Radio is a weekly broadcast whose mission is to uplift and inspire you to make the world a better place. Every week, we are speaking with best-selling authors, film producers, TED speakers, happiness experts, and also everyday folks just like you, people whose small acts make a big difference in the world. We call them Better Worldians. And speaking of Better Worldians, let me now introduce you to my co-host, Mary Sue Hansel and Gregory Hansel. Mary Sue has been a successful entrepreneur and business executive for over 3 years. She is also an avid practitioner of the healing arts, positive psychology, and spirituality. Now, here's my life partner, Mary Sue.
Hi, everyone. It's great to be here with you today to share all the good that's being done in the world. Now, let me also introduce Gregory Hansel. Gregory has a background in philosophy and world religions, and most importantly, has spent over 15 years at the intersection of technology, social causes, and big ideas.
Hi, everyone. This is Greg. Thank you all for joining us today here on Better Worldians Radio. Let me first just tell you a bit about my dad, Ray, who you just heard from. He's a serial entrepreneur who successfully founded and with Mary Sue took public a national marketing firm. Giving back's always been really important for Dad, who supports cancer research, disabled children, and disadvantaged families, among many other causes. And hey, by the way, we're the family team that created the popular social game on Facebook called A Better World. It rewards players for doing good deeds while helping to raise money and awareness for charities. To date, over 13 million good deeds have been done in A Better World by over 2 million people. And starting in March, we're supporting the Miracle Foundation, an organization you'll learn quite a bit about in the next hour. On this week's episodes of Better Worldians Radio, we are discussing abundant miracles.
Joining us today is Carolyn Boudreau, founder of the Miracle Foundation. Carolyn Boudreau founded the Miracle Foundation in 2000 after she visited India for the first time. From the first moment she met a group of more than 100 orphan children, she committed her life to helping them realize their full potential. Carolyn holds a BS in psychology. Prior to her nonprofit work, she had a successful career in media advertising. For her achievements with the Miracle Foundation, Caroline was presented with the Hope Award in 2005 and the Impact Award in 2008. In 2009, she was invited to join the Young Global Leaders, a community of the World Economic Forum. She has been featured in various forums of media, including the CNN, One Piece at a Time, a film of 2009, filmed by Turk Pripkin. In 2011, Caroline completed a prestigious course on global leadership and public policy for the 21st century at Harvard University. Caroline, it is great to have you with us today on Better Worldians Radio. Thanks for joining us.
Well, thank you guys for having me. I really appreciate it. Looking forward to some uplifting and inspiring today.
You bet. You bet. Now, as we've been reading about your story, it seemed that it all started with a trip around the world with a friend. Tell us what your life was like before you took that trip.
Oh, you know, I was typical in that I was, you know, working, you know, 40 to 60 hours a week, and I was, I would say I was pretty selfish back then. You know, I was making a lot of money. I was financially stable. I had done really well financially considering how old I was, but I was so unfulfilled. I mean, I just didn't have any fulfillment in me, and I just kept thinking, you know, well, when I, you know, get the new car, then I'll feel better. Or when I get the boyfriend, or I'll feel better. Well, then, you know, and then I buy a house, and I thought I would feel better. And it just, nothing was working to get that fulfillment that I was looking for. And it got pretty frustrating. So much, in fact, that, you know, one night I was with one of my business associates, and we were talking, and I said, you know, I just can't fill this hole in my life. I just can't figure out what it is that's going to make this go away or going to make everything okay. I mean, I just don't understand what it's all for. And she said, you know, well, you know, I'm pretty sick of the corporate world myself. Why don't we, you know, sell off our stock for a year, quit our job, sell off our stock, and take a trip around the world? And that's what we decided to do. So, it did. It all started with that trip around the world. We had gone back to her house and spread this world map on the floor and started picking the countries that we wanted to visit. And we said, you know, she wanted to go to India because she'd sponsored a child, and she wanted to go and meet him. And I just told her, I mean, I just looked at her and shook my head, and I just said, oh, gosh, Chris, I mean, he's not real. They give everybody the same picture. I mean, this is the oldest scam in the book, you know. I mean, there's just no way. And she got real serious, and she just said, you know, I care about him. You know, I've been supporting him and for 4.5 years, and, you know, it's really important to me. And so, you know, I just said, well, you know, you better call the company and tell them we're coming, because they've got about 6 months to sift through 1 billion people to find this particular little boy. So, you know, that's why I went to India.
Mm. So tell us about the story of going to that first orphanage in India.
Well, you know, it wasn't an orphanage. It was actually, this organization was supporting children with parents, which I've learned now that most organizations are supporting children with parents. There aren't organizations that are just targeting specifically orphans, you know, with the exception of the Miracle Foundation. But we got to India in May. We quit our jobs in January of 2000, and we started traveling January 15th of 2000. And we started our trip around the world. It was a one-year trip, and we arrived in India in May. And which is, you know, for people that know India, it is so hot in India. It was 119 degrees in the village where we were going. So we went to the village. We arrive in this village, which is 45 minutes off a paved road. So we're, you know, going out into the bush and into the interior. And we arrive at this village, mud huts, thatched roofs, you know, livestock tied, you know, when it was just National Geographic, and we just get paraded through this village of all these people. The men are in the parade line with us going through the roads, and the women are on the side kind of, you know, egging us on and clapping and cheering. And at the end of this welcome, we see this little boy at the end of the road, and he's holding the first letter that my friend had sent him.
Oh, my word.
I was shocked. I mean, you could have knocked me over with a feather. And this organization promised clean water, electric power, and free primary education. And they were getting those three things. They were still, I mean, I even wrote in my journal that night, I wrote, you know, today I met the poorest people in the world. So we decided to keep going back to that village every day. And it would be, you know, we would be so hot and gritty by the end of the day. You know, I told you it was so hot that we always just wanted to go back to our hotel at the end of the day because there was an air conditioner. But the person in charge of the organization invited us to his house for dinner, and we reluctantly agreed because it would just be rude not to go. But we were always anxious to get home to that shower. But we agreed to go. So the next day I got up early, and I called my mom for Mother's Day. It was May the 14th of 2000, Mother's Day in the United States. I went to great lengths to call my mom. And then we went and worked in that village in 119 degree heat all day. And then we went to this man's house for dinner. And when we walked into his house, I had no idea what to expect, but I certainly never expected to see, you know, starving, filthy, bald children. It looked like a concentration camp. I mean, the kids were sleeping on, you know, wooden beds, and there was no electricity, and they were, you know, they were in rags, and they were filthy, and they were all bald, which I know now they were bald because they didn't have enough protein, but I had no idea why all these children were bald. And they had these empty looks in their eyes. I mean, it was it was just horrific. And so we had dinner with them. We had, they served us chicken, and they served the children rice with sugar in it so they would eat it. And then we went to a prayer service with them that was beautiful. And then after the prayer service, the kids, you know, we were trying to hold the kids, and it was so much easier than we, you know, sadly wanted. But we were calling them Velcro babies because they were just attaching to us. I mean, we would have kids hanging on our legs and our arms, and it was so hot, and the body temperature, it was just overwhelming. But there was this little baby girl, and you know, I could tell she was trying to get to me, but the competition was just too much. So I finally just reached over a bunch of kids and picked her up. And, you know, when you would pick them up, and they would just push their little bodies into you, you know, and she just got so close to me. And I sang her a lullaby in honor of my mother, and she fell asleep in my arms. And when I went to her room to put her in her bed, or, you know, I thought I'd be putting her in a crib, really, but I walk into her room to put her in the bed, you know, and I have to put this starving little angel on a wooden bed. Mm. You know, I mean, just the minute I heard her bones hit that bed, I just thought, somebody better help these children.
Yes, absolutely. Is this the little girl, Shibani?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. And so that's how you met her. And where is she now? How is she doing?
She's fantastic. She's 15. She, you know, she thinks she's famous in the United States because everybody that ever goes to that orphanage where she is, you know, seeks her out. But I mean, she's stunningly beautiful. She's doing great.
Now, you left India after that visit, and you knew, just as you indicated a few seconds ago, that you had to do something to help these kids out. And tell us a little bit more about that calling.
It was, you know, it's what I call the burden of proof, you know. I mean, you just can't ever not know it. Now that you know, and I had heard about kids, you know, but I never met any of them for sure. And then the fact that it was Mother's Day, I mean, you know, Ray, how can you, yeah. How can you not? I mean, it's just, yeah. It was just so obvious to me that, you know, that here are these orphan kids, and I get to meet them. And so, you know, my mom always told me responsibility is the ability to respond. Mm-hmm. And that's just how I felt. I just felt like I had an ability to respond to this. And so I came back to the United States, and I started working on what kids need to thrive, you know. And so I've spent the last 14 years figuring out how to give children in orphanages a real childhood and a chance to reach their full potential.
Mm-hmm. That's amazing. It's great that you were touched by that, and it was miraculous that this whole thing sort of unfolded in this way. So I commend you for responding, and in a way that your mom suggested, responsibility is the ability to respond, and you certainly took up that challenge. We're going to take a short break right now. I'd like to offer this challenge to our listeners. If you know someone whose acts, no matter how small, are making a difference in the lives of other people, we here would love to hear about them. Tweet us at #BetterWorldian so we can let the Better Worldian community know. We'll talk more with Carolyn Boudreau when we come back, learn more about her story. And in the meantime, you can learn more at BetterWorldians.com and follow our live tweets at Twitter.com/BetterWorldians. We'll be right back.
Save on your prescriptions with the RX Savings Plus Drug Discount Card offered by Voice America. It is not insurance, and discounts are only available from participating pharmacies. But 9 out of 10 pharmacies participate nationwide. Start saving today. Print your free card online at voiceamerica.rxsavingsplus.com or text the word TALK RADIO to 96362.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from then on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a better worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Take us on the go. It's even easier now. The Voice America Talk Radio Network has launched our mobile app for iPhone, Android, or BlackBerry. Visit the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market to download the app powered by Aircast. It's free and no registration is necessary. In minutes, you could be enjoying your favorite Voice America Talk Radio host, no matter where you are, in the car, out and about, while traveling, or anytime you can't be close to your computer. Catch up on the archives you've missed or discover new shows on the spot. Search Voice America at your favorite app store.
Have you friended us on Facebook yet? Why not? Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for the keywords World Talk Radio. Once you're a part of our Facebook network, you'll receive daily messages about what's happening with our shows, this week's featured guests, and new happenings at the World Talk Radio Network. And you can add your voice to the always active discussions on our timeline. Just go to facebook.com/World Talk Radio or search for World Talk Radio.
This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back with Caroline Boudreaux, the founder of the Miracle Foundation, a nonprofit organization dedicated to helping orphans realize their full potential. We'll talk more with Caroline in a moment, but first, we'd like to share some big news here at Better Worldians Radio. We've recently launched a worldwide kindness campaign. We're challenging Better Worldians around the globe to watch a two-minute video that illustrates the power of kindness. When it reaches 1 million views, we will release funds for surgeries that will allow 10 kids in the developing world to walk for the first time. Please watch the video, share it with your friends at colorwithkindness.com. That's colorwithkindness.com. And now let's welcome back Caroline and Mary Sue.
Hi, Caroline.
Hi, Mary Sue.
You know, after your trip to India, you ended up creating the Miracle Foundation, which turns houses for abandoned children into real homes through improved nutrition, loving house mothers, and better education. To begin with, can you tell us how you came up with that name, Miracle Foundation?
You know, it was kind of a joke, Mary Sue, because I thought, you know, there's no way to do this. I mean, I thought the problem was so huge that I really kind of tongue-in-cheek called it the Miracle Foundation because I knew that it would take a miracle to get the foundation on the ground. I mean, and, you know, I mean, I know that's not a great story, but that's the truth. It's like, there's no way this is going to happen. I'm going to be miracle-dependent forever, you know.
It sounds like it was a miracle.
Yeah, well, and it totally has been, you know. We're still, to this day, we're miracle-dependent, you know.
Uh-huh. Now, you primarily do your work out of Austin, Texas, and how does that work? And then you travel to India?
Yeah, so I've lived in Austin, Texas for the last 20 years, and you know, Austin is such a great place. You know, it's a very diverse city. This work has been embraced by this city, and it's been wonderful. So a lot of the work that we do here in the United States is to raise funds and develop the curriculum that goes into the orphanages. And then we have an India staff that actually goes into the orphanages and helps them implement the improvements.
And you're traveling this week, aren't you, to India?
Yeah. I'm leaving in a couple of days and headed to four orphanages. We have nine that we're working with, but I'm going to go to four of them on this trip.
And so you just check in with them and see how they're doing?
Exactly. Exactly. You know, we have lots of metrics that we use to make sure that the orphanages are doing well, but, you know, there's just something about the eyes of your heart, you know, that you can, you know, that's what I'm looking for is, you know, are the children really enjoying a childhood? Are they really being loved? And, you know, is this a place where I'd want to grow up? I mean, believe it or not, there are orphanages that I would live in. I mean, that's how good they are. And it's not because they're good because their infrastructure is so fantastic. It's because it's good because it's a real loving home.
That sounds wonderful. Now, you formed the Miracle Foundation based on the Children's Bill of Rights. Can you tell us what that is?
Yeah. So, you know, when I was trying to figure out how to help, I came across the United Nations Convention on the Rights of the Child. And that's 41 articles that have been ratified by 183 countries. And that basically says that all children on all continents have the same fundamental rights. And what we did was we took the rights that had to do with orphans. So if it had to do with juvenile delinquents or refugees, I took them out, and we ended up with 12 rights of the child. And if you give children, any child in the world, these 12 rights, they can reach their full potential. Mm-hmm. And those rights are the right to a stable, loving, nurturing environment, health care and nutrition, clean water and electric power, guidance from a loving adult, to live in conditions of dignity and freedom, to be protected from abuse and neglect, to be given an education and equal opportunities, and some spiritual development, you know, some ethics.
Yes.
So there are 12 rights that we promise children.
Oh, that's great. Now, many of the children that you help are not available for adoption. I was surprised at that. Can you tell us why that is?
So, you know, a lot of orphans are orphans because their mom died or their dad died, or their mom's in jail or their dad's in jail. And so a lot of orphans have one parent out there. Their parents might be mentally handicapped or physically handicapped, but for some reason, or they've been abused, but for some reason the kids still have some kind of relative in the country. And so the relatives don't want them to go to another country or even go to another family where they won't ever see them again. So somewhere around 95% of orphans in the world are not available for adoption, it's unbelievable. But it's why it's so important for us to go into orphanages that are already in existence and help them run like a great company, help them run like a family.
Oh, yes. Now, do these relatives visit them? Is that...
You know, sometimes they do and sometimes they don't. I mean, there's 141 million orphans in the world. That is how many people live in Russia. So it's this huge problem, and then obviously there's a story for every single one of them.
Jeez, I'm just so shocked about that. Now, you've expanded your work to help more than just orphans in the Miracle Foundations. What else do you do there?
Well, really, it's anybody that touches the orphanage. So, you know, house mothers, one of the things, the right to a stable, loving, nurturing environment, that's about having a mom. That's about having a woman or a guardian that really takes care of you. And so we hire widows, we hire divorced women, we hire women from the low castes, and they become house mothers. We give them a great, is a great job. It's a great income. They get a bank account, which gives them, you know, access to their kind of social security. So taking care of the women is, of course, the key to taking care of the orphans. So a lot of the work that we do is with the women.
Yes, I saw some of those loving-looking individuals on your website and on the Facebook page, and they really look like they're really caring for the children. Now, I think I read that it's a 1 to 20 ratio, and it used to be in other orphanages much higher.
Yeah, a typical orphanage anywhere in the world has an average caretaker-to-orphan ratio of 1 to 80.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, I mean, that's more kids. You know, so a school bus holds 50 kids, you know? And it's how can you possibly raise 50 kids?
How could you possibly do that and, you know, give them any attention at all?
Yeah, and the fact is you can't.
No. Mm. Can you share your favorite story with our listeners about the children or a particular child?
Well, yeah, sure. I mean, there's 100 of them.
Keep on telling me. I love
Well, you know, one of I was I was at one of the orphanages, and one of the rights of a child is the right to be heard and participate in decisions that affect you. And so the way we handle that right is we form children's committees. So they're democratically elected committees by the children themselves, and they have, you know, different orphanages have different committees, but they have, you know, a recreation committee or a health care committee or a nutrition committee, or, you know, that's, they have these committees within the orphanage. So I was at this orphanage a few months ago, and I said, you know, raise your hand if you're on a committee. And about 25% of the kids raised their hand. And I said, well, raise your hand if you're on the health care committee. And, you know, they raised their hand. And then I said, stand up if you are the minister of the health care committee. And this little 8-year-old orphaned girl stands up. I mean, she is so proud of herself that she is the minister of the health care committee.
Oh, Jesus.
Precious. I mean, just beaming with pride, you know. And I said, so tell me what your job is. What's your job on the health care committee? And she said, it's our job to make sure that everybody brushes their teeth every morning and every night. And I said, well, how is she doing? Let me see. Everybody show me your teeth, you know. And so all the kids start showing me their teeth. Well, the driver comes from the back, and he shows me his teeth. These kids are getting everybody around them. The house mothers have to brush their teeth, the drivers, the cooks. They're making everybody do it, you know?
That is terrific.
Yeah.
That's a great story. How about a story about a successful orphanage, some place that you've turned around through your funding and your attention and your procedures?
Oh, yeah, that would... Yeah, there's this one orphanage. When we got there, again, the house mother to child ratio was 80-1. It was more like 90-1 at that orphanage. The children were listless. They were so malnourished and stunted that they were just literally leaning against the walls.
Oh my!
Yeah, they had no beds, no mattresses. No, they were sleeping just on the floor. They had horrible boils on their skin. The dirty water that they were using the same water to wash their clothes, brush their teeth, drink. I mean, it was, I just don't know how they were surviving. They were barely surviving. And so we started working with this orphanage. We brought in a social worker, which is the first person we bring on to any orphanage. We brought in a social worker, and that social worker hired more house mothers to make the ratio 20-1. We got them beds. We started fixing their skin. We got them vaccinations. We dewormed them. They were suffering with worms. That's why they were so listless. We dewormed them. And I'm telling you today, this orphan, and by the way, you know, every wall in that whole orphanage was just gray. It was just the color of cement.
Mm-hmm.
And we've gone and we've painted every wall. The orphans have painted every wall. It's a total home for children.
So there's bright colored things.
Yeah, oh, bright colored animals, stars, Saturn. You know, the stars, the planets, the whole thing. Dogs, cats. You know, the horses, elephants. I mean, you know, it's so children's home, and it's such a children's home. It's such a great place for kids to grow up. They are now playing cricket. They are all on the growth chart. There's so much energy, you almost can't take it. There's 140 kids at this orphanage. I mean, it's so much energy, it's just impossible to take. And they get milk every day and cookies and great food, and they are...
What a transformation.
It's a total transformation, and they are so resilient. And they're doing so much better than we thought. I mean, you know, some of these kids are going to get to college. I mean, they're studying so hard. I mean, they just, you know, and sadly, you know, they told one of my social workers, they said, you know, thank you for coming. We always prayed that God would come.
Wow. Wow, what a story, what a story. Amazing. You know, I saw on your Facebook page, I think it was, or your website, that you have some partnerships with places like Whole Foods. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah, so, you know, we're in Austin, Texas. Whole Foods is in Austin, Texas. We could throw a rock from our headquarters, which is tiny, to their headquarters, which is huge. But they are such a purpose-driven company, and they offer their employees they get to go to places where they source their food. They happen to source all their cashews and tea, a lot of their tea, in India. And so they asked us, you know, we're going to send our employees to go see this cashew farm. I mean, do you think they could go to an orphanage at the same, you know, while they're there. And we, you know, absolutely, they're going to love it. Well, they loved it so much, they send 60 people a year to those orphanages. And they work and they play with those kids. And it's just been, it's been phenomenal. And they make a big donation every year. We've had partnerships with National Instruments. National Instruments goes and teaches robotics to the orphans. I mean, this is unheard of. You know, I mean, these are kids that would never have a chance at an education, and we've partnered with National Instruments and Lego to teach them robotics. So, yeah, I mean, they're just some fantastic partnerships out there. I mean, I think companies are getting to a point where they really want their people to experience some fulfillment.
Yes, and it's great for everybody.
It's great for everybody. We're actually talking to a couple, you know, a few more companies now about it since it's gone so well with Whole Foods.
And we talk, many different of our episodes have been with positive psychologists that say just doing things like this make you personally happy. So it's good to hear these stories.
There's no doubt about it. I mean, it's, you know, there, it's so much for, you know, I tell people, do yourself a favor and help these kids, because there's so much to it. There's so much in us that comes alive when we help other people come to life, you know?
Right. Now, Caroline, what has been your biggest challenge so far?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, Mary Sue, how long is the program? I mean, you know, my elbows and knees are all scraped up. I mean, I've just been through, it's been very difficult. You know, we've had to face corruption, you know. I mean, there's lots of corruption in these countries. And so I will say, you know, with every problem we've had, which we've had a lot, and we've had, you know, people stealing, you know, things from us and wanting money for things that weren't true. And so, you know, we keep engineering our program, our methodology to guard against corruption, to be systematic, you know. So, you know, I think getting the people around, I think getting the cultural change within the orphanages is always a big challenge. You know, they don't know what an orphanage can look like. They don't know when you start talking to them that, you know, like, here's a perfect example. One of the house mothers said, you know, I think I liked the kids better when they were sick, because there's so much energy once they're well that they get pretty hard, you know, to manage. And you know, you can't be naughty if you're not healthy, you know. So the minute they get healthy, there's always going to be a couple of naughty kids, and that's when it's going to come out. So... But challenge is like crazy. I mean,
we had the biggest smiles, I imagine.
What's that?
I said the naughty kids with the biggest smiles.
Oh yeah, yeah, and preciously, precious bad, you know.
Mm-hmm. Now, what are your goals for the future? You've done so much already.
Well, you know, we developed a model that is, like I said, based on the 12 rights that the United Nations created. So. This model should work in any country that's ratified that convention on the rights of the child. So while we're trying to grow linearly, you know, one orphanage at a time, we're going into, you know, more and more orphanages, that's an obvious way to grow. But now we're talking to other countries about using the methodology in their orphanages.
Oh.
And that's really the kind of exponential growth and scaling that we're looking for. So it's a really exciting time now.
Oh, are you talking about going to other countries other than India?
Yes, we're talking about that. We're talking about partnering with the government of India to get this in more orphanages. So, you know, it's so exciting. And then there are other countries that really want this.
Hmm. Now, you talk a lot about the importance of family and a family environment for these kids. How important is that for them, and how important do you think family is for all of us?
I think, you know, I think it's critical. I mean, can you imagine, you know, not having a mom or a dad?
Can hardly imagine.
You can hardly imagine. And, you know, when I was a little girl, I had gone to a department store with my mom, and I went in between the racks. You know, like you do, you kind of crawl in between the clothes.
Yes.
And I came out, and I couldn't find her. Mm. You know, and the panic that I had from not, you know, where is she? And I mean, it was probably 2 minutes I was lost, you know, but I just remember that feeling. And I, you know, these kids feel like that every day. They're absolutely aware that they're alone. And so, you know, our job in creating that family environment, you know, when I say it's 20-to-1 ratio, it's those 20 kids are a family. They eat together, they study together, they sleep together. They are boys and girls of different ages, stair-stepped, just like a family, because it's so critical. And while, you know, regular people with parents fall in love with their parents, orphans really have to fall in love with each other.
Yeah, you know, I saw that on the Facebook page, the children hugging one another, and I was wondering, they, even though they're not related, they seem like they, you know, just like brothers and sisters, and the house mothers almost seem like they're real mothers.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, the house mothers love them, and the more training the house mothers get, the better they do, the happier they are. But you know, families, gosh, the importance of family. You know, it's. And how often I had taken mine for granted, you know. These kids don't ever take anything for granted. They're you know, that's why I talk about abundance with them, is they have so much abundance because they have enough food, you know.
Well, that's why we want to ask you, how can the listeners help you? How can people help you in your mission?
Oh, gosh. Well, you know, I mean, they can go on our Facebook page and like us on Facebook and keep up with us that way. Okay. They can go on our website and learn more. The best way to help is to make a decision to help monthly. You know, even $10 a month, $25 a month, it just grows exponentially. And what that really does for us is it helps us plan how many orphanages we can take on. Because
we
can expect that money. So,
So I saw there's something about sponsoring an orphanage. How does that work?
Yeah, so it cost us about $100 a month to give a child all 12 rights. And so we call it a sponsorship level. It's $100 a month, and you get cards from the kids, you get letters from the kids, you find out about different children and different orphanages. It's really great because you kind of get to know the kids on a personal level, and everybody wants to know them on a personal level. They're so powerful.
Well, this is an amazing story. And, you know, your enthusiasm for somebody that's been doing this for a number of years is incredible. It's as if you just started yesterday. So,
well, thanks. It's because Mary Sue asked me about the kids, you know.
I know. That's where the love
that's
comes.
That's my weakness, too.
Right. Well, we're going to take another break right now. But when we come back, we'll talk more with Caroline Boudreau. We'll be right back.
Find out which guests are being featured this week. Read our network press releases and read the blog posts from your favorite hosts. Go to iradioblog.com today, powered by the Voice America Talk Radio Network.
How can we make it a better world?
I think we can make it a better world if we had peace among each other.
Everybody needs to help their neighbor, and then it will spread from there on.
I should do more.
I could do more. I spend so much time on Facebook.
How much time do I spend on Facebook?
Probably more than I should be spending.
I would definitely get back if I could find the time.
Now you can help others just by playing a game on Facebook. It's called A Better World. Share your hopes and dreams. Do good deeds. Make a difference. And have fun. Become a Better Worldian. Join a community where all good deeds get rewarded. Log in today to find out how you can make a difference every day.
For more information, visit facebook.com/abetterworld.
Now there's a new destination for video content, VoiceAmerica.tv. Just like our radio channels and so much more. Voice America Variety, Health and Wellness, Business, Sports, Green Talk, Power Up Motorsports, and Seventh Wave Network now have their own video channel components. Plus, check out exclusive programming, including movies, music, educational courses, science and history, current events, and short features. High definition, premier quality programs available 24/7. VoiceAmerica.tv. If you think you've seen online TV like this before, let us surprise you.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network live wherever you go on iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple iTunes App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market.
This This is Better Worldians Radio with a family team of Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel. To connect with the show today, please call us at 1-866-472-5788. That's 1-866-472-5788. You may also send us an email to radio@betterworldians.com. Now, back to Better Worldians Radio.
We're back now with Caroline Boudreau, founder of the Miracle Foundation.
Hi, Caroline. This is Greg.
Hi, Greg.
You know, I wanted to ask you, you know, what have you learned about yourself, you know, through this whole journey from before you even went to India to today? How's this changed you?
I think I've gotten a new level of selfishness, if you will. I know that's kind of a funny answer, but you know, before I was always trying to get to the next thing and the next car and the next jewelry and the next, you know, but now I realize that in giving, being a philanthropist, I mean, that feels better than any kind of car you can drive or any kind of, you know, jewelry you can buy. And so I've just kind of learned that it's really in giving that you receive so much. I think that's one of the biggest changes for me. And then, of course, you know, when I was in business, I was a little bit, it wasn't such a team effort. You know, I didn't have to bring everybody along. I could just, you know, make unilateral decisions and things would just go the way I wanted them to. And, you know, but in this thing, this is such a team effort. It's just, talk about bringing people along with you, you know? And yeah. So it's been a really interesting, venture, you know, and I mean, I know you guys are entrepreneurs, serial entrepreneurs. And so I think another big learning lesson for me is that when you're in the business world and something happens, let's say you're a policeman or something and you have an emergency, well, you have a process and a procedure, you know, and everybody looks to you and the process and procedure is there. And while it might be an emergency to the person suffering it, the people that are working it know exactly what to do. But in an entrepreneurial venture, when something happens, there are no processes and procedures. I mean, you're just the first to know.
Yeah.
And so the whole team's looking at you going, what do we do? What do you do? And you don't know what to do any more than anybody else. So.
That's right. You say, oh,
right? Right, right. Is this not right?
Absolutely. You have that
every day.
Yeah. It's like you're just making it up every day, you know?
Right. Well, since this has been such a team effort, let me ask you what you've learned about other people as well.
Oh, that, you know, that if everybody can come to the table with their best, you know, one of the things I brought on a chief operating officer, in 2009, and we made an agreement that whoever cares more about something wins.
That's great.
It's been great. And so it's wonderful to leverage people's strengths and also know your weaknesses. I think that's one of the big things, is to know your weaknesses. You know, I'm not real strong operationally, but she's super strong operationally, so we depend on her for that side, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. Any other big surprises of just, you know, of this whole journey that, you know, that you've gone through?
I'm surprised that, and not just on this journey, but, you know, really in working around the world and with the World Economic Forum and with The Economist, you know, with The Economist magazine and, you know, some of the other people in the nonprofit world, the United Nations, Millennium Goals, you know, we're really on the brink of fixing these huge problems of infant mortality and maternal mortality and people dying of hunger. I mean, we really are on the brink of the biggest human accomplishment ever, which is to end human suffering and poverty. You know, the United Nations predicts we're 17 years away from that, that, you know, in 2030, we will have ended hunger. So
that's amazing.
So I love the fact that we're on the brink of this and that it's really working. You know, we've thrown money at the third world for so long, and I think there was a lot of donor fatigue, and I think people got really tired of it. But now that metrics are in place and we really know how to do it and we've learned our hard lessons, we're really making progress. It's so exciting.
I'm so glad you said that. You know, I think a lot of people don't know how close we are and how far we've come. And, you know, they don't know. There is, I think, still, unfortunately, a lot of donor fatigue out there for a lot of different areas. And people don't realize, wow, we can really make a difference. We can make this happen. It's not a big black hole. You know, change is possible, you know?
Absolutely. And, you know, the orphan problem, this is a solvable problem.
Mm-hmm.
We know exactly how to do it. You know, and so it's very exciting. And if you don't mind, I'll just tell you, you know, in 1974, we didn't know as a world that there was enough food on the planet. We actually thought that the reason people were dying of hunger was because there wasn't enough food on the planet. Then an organization showed up. It was called the Hunger Project, started by a woman named Joan Holmes, funded by John Denver, actually the singer. And they started benchmarking the number of people that were dying a day of hunger. And in 1978, they said, and they had to really calculate the database, and they said, you know, people don't die of diarrhea. You're only dying of diarrhea because you don't have enough calories in your body. So we're going to say everybody that they said was dying of diarrhea, they're actually dying of hunger. So they really had to figure out the metrics. And in 1978, they told the world, number one, that there was enough food in the world. Nobody knew that before. Number two, that they were going to try to end it. People thought they were crazy. And number three, they reported that 40,000 children were dying a day of hunger. 40,000. Well, today, fast forward to 2013, today, I mean, it's 2014, but the last numbers out were in 2013, there are 8,500 children dying a day of hunger. So, I mean, we've made great progress, and this is with the population boom. But great progress is being made.
It's incredible.
It's incredible.
Yeah, it really is, and it's inspiring. You know, it's nice to sit, nice to hear that, nice to tell the people at home that, you know, what they do can make a difference, and that, you know, real progress has been made. You know, I know that you've talked. You actually just mentioned this a minute ago, and I've seen this on your website and some of the materials about this notion of abundance. You know, and I know you've said that your work with orphans has really made you think about abundance and what it means to really have enough. Can you talk a bit about that, you know, what you think it means to have enough and experiencing that kind of abundance?
Yes, thank you for asking that question. And that's the magic word. You know, I think the conversation about abundance starts with the word enough.
Mm-hmm.
And the empathy bridge that we can have with the poor, you know, the way people can identify with the poor is to look at the way Americans look at time. You know, we just act like we never have enough. We're so busy. Our hair's on fire. It's just we never have enough of it. Well, so that's how the poor think about food and resources.
Yeah.
And once the poor start getting enough food and enough resources, so once we take children from malnourished, not eating every day, to getting four good meals a day, going to school, you know, once they reach that platform of enough, their whole world changes. They don't really see things like, oh, when I get there, I'm going to be okay. They realize that they're okay now.
Mm-hmm.
And so the you know, just if your listeners would just play with me just a second, say, you know, if I would really just stop and think, you know, the fact is I really do have enough.
Yeah.
I really do have enough food. I really do have enough time. And it just calms us down, and it takes that abundance word from the head, like, down into the heart. Yeah, and, you know, the other way to look at it, and, you know, I learned this from the orphans, too. You know, if I was an orphan, if I was living in a place where I didn't have a mom or a dad, and I didn't have enough food every day, I'd probably be, you know, pretty bad pity party. You know, I probably would have a hard time getting over that. But like I said, once they reach that platform of enough, that level that I think in America a lot of us are just born over that level of enough, you know, I never didn't have enough.
Yeah.
Once they reach that platform of enough, they just think about things so differently. They decide that they're going to make the decision about what their life is going to look like, as opposed to us, you know, sometimes in this culture where we say, well, you know, I'm going to let circumstances determine my outlook, you know, like. And what orphans do is they say, I'm going to decide how I handle this. And so that's why they start studying, they start playing great, and they start, you know, their whole life changes when they realize that they have enough and that they're gonna make the decision about their life and not let circumstances do it.
Well, then what's your best advice for those people at home with their hair on fire or us entrepreneurs with our hair on fire, you know, to honestly make them realize the abundance in their own life? How do we realize we have enough?
I think a big part of it is, you know, that there's that story about that guy who, you know, he was hired to make a mat. This is, you know, hundreds of years ago. He's hired to make a map, and so he hires some local tribesmen, and he makes them work, you know, and they're working and they're, you know, walking through the land, and then on the seventh day, they just stop. And he says, you know, what are you doing? We need to continue to work. And they said, well, we don't work on the seventh day. You know, this is the seventh day, we just don't work. And the guy's like, well, I'm paying you to work. I didn't pay you to take any days off, you know. And they said, well, we got to let our souls catch up with us.
Yeah.
You know, and I think there's something to that Sabbath, something to that stop and let your soul catch up with you
mm-hmm.
that we've kind of gotten away from, that I got away from. You know, so I definitely think, you know, that quiet time, that time to just stop and take a break, take it easy, you know, really does. I think that's a really good prescription.
I think that's perfect.
Yeah.
You know, I'm curious. You know, you've turned your life around to do great things and help others. And I want to know if you think, you know, can everyone do the same? Do we all have it in our power to make a difference?
No doubt about it. I mean, it's why we're here. You know, I think if you're not making a difference, you're missing out. You're not playing full on. You know, I think it's the call on everyone's life is to figure out what it is that you can do to make a difference.
No, I agree.
Yeah, and it's that higher level of selfishness. I mean, that's where the fun gets. I mean, that's what's really fun. Is to be able to, you know, give other people life. It's the best, you know, thrill in the whole world, best drug in the whole world.
It's true. You know, I think one thing we talk about here a lot at Better Worldians Radio is that, you know, you mentioned it in a way, the very first thing I asked you is, you know, it's kind of a selfishness. You know, it's good to be good. It feels incredible to be good, and it's the most rewarding thing people can experience. And, you know, through what we do here, what we do with our Facebook game, A Better World, you know, we're really trying to show people, you know, see how you feel when you do good every day. See how you feel when you do good for someone else and pick them up and dust them off. And, you know, overall, how people feel is, wow, yeah, that does feel better. Wow, that does make a difference.
Yeah, you know, it's the best game out there. And it would be different if the world didn't need us, you know, and it would be different if it wasn't a winning game, a game you could win. But this is a game we can win.
Yeah. Well, I'd love to take some questions from listeners now. As you know, some really wonderful questions that came in from Facebook, and I think we have some time before the break to take a few of those. Let's see. A question came in from James. How does it feel when a donation comes in, knowing it's going to make the difference in the life of a child?
It's a total thrill. It's a total thrill. You know, if I could tell the kids, I would, you know. Yeah, I just love it. And I think it's one of those things, like you were saying, Greg, it's, you know, it's one of those things you just don't regret, you know. I mean, no one gives to a nonprofit and regrets it later, unless the nonprofit doesn't keep up their end of the bargain.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. So, yeah, I love it. I mean, I still get to use my business, you know, business brain, and still, you know, I still enjoy the hunt, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's fun.
Absolutely. I think a lot of people have a misconception that nonprofits, you know, aren't businesses, that they're not difficult to run. And, you know, in my experience, I spent some time in that world. They can be much more difficult to run, you know.
Yeah, and they definitely should be run with metrics, and they definitely should be run like a business. You know, I mean, I think we're doing the world a disservice if we don't run it like a business.
Yeah, I agree. Well, thank you for that question, James. And here's another Facebook question that came in. As you find effective, this is perfect actually, and efficient ways to make a difference within your organization, are you able to share that information with other organizations facing similar challenges?
So the short answer is yes. We are open sourcing everything. So, you know, we have life skills education. I mean, we have life skills education that we teach the kids. We have 14 modules of life skills education that we've made specific to age groups. And so these are things that your parents normally teach you, like the difference between good touch and bad touch, your body and you, what are problem-solving skills, how to think critically about a problem, emotionality. So we have these amazing life skills modules, and we are open sourcing them. So anybody at any orphanage can teach them to their kids. Same things with house mother training. We have 16 modules of house mother training, all about child development, how to take care of yourself as a mom, what are great alternatives to corporate punishment or corporal punishment. And so these are other things that we're open sourcing and just letting other people have. The job descriptions for the accountants that live on site, that work on site, the job descriptions for social workers that live on site. So we are open sourcing everything.
I think it's great that you're sharing that, those insights, those metrics,
And
that
I killed myself to get them. if I could save somebody else some pain,
Yeah. Well, thank you for that question. Let's see, maybe we have time for at least one more. Question from Keith. What are the biggest challenges in raising the money to do the great work you know needs to be done and that you, of course, want to do?
Well, I know that a lot of people have problems raising money. I think that's what people I think that's a big thing that a lot of nonprofits are struggling with. For us, for my organization, we worked so hard on getting the model down, the replicable, systematic, measurable model down, that really the fundraising hasn't been as hard. Because I think that fundraising happens when you can prove impact.
Mm-hmm.
So I usually say impact over income. So because our impact is so strong, the income, comes to us. So I am a fundraiser by nature. I am passionate about this, and I think between the passion and the measurements, the metrics, the proof, it makes fundraising easier. But people want to know that their money, where their money's going, and how you're using their money. And if you can do that for people, fundraising becomes a lot easier.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. That's something that's very important to us here. We've always partnered with people where we really feel like, the money does the most good. People don't want to pad anybody's wallet or, their office. They want to know that they're doing real profound good. So thank you for saying that.
Yeah, and, I think it's the new brink of nonprofit world. The question was always, what percentage of your money goes to the program? And, our answer to that is it's currently 84%. 84% of every dollar goes directly into the program. But the new question, and another great question, is, and just as important, is how do you know it's working?
Right.
Well,
yeah.
It's clear you're doing quite a lot to make a significant impact on the Miracle Foundation. And I compliment you for your enthusiasm. As you said earlier, that you are playing full on, and I think your mother's comment about responsibility, which is the ability to respond, she'd be pretty proud of everything that you're doing. So my compliments for everything you're doing to make the world a better place. We're going to wrap up at this point. You can find out more about the Miracle Foundation by going to miraclefoundation.org. Caroline, we'd like to thank you again for joining us on Better Worldians Radio.
Thank you. Thank you, guys.
You're welcome.
You're very welcome. Please join us next week on Better Worldians Radio. We're going to be talking to Steve Moeller, the author of Endorphinomics, a book about finding the balance between personal happiness and financial success. We have an excellent lineup of guests in the coming weeks, and if you know an unsung Better Worldian who you think would make a great guest on our show, you can send us an email at radio@betterworldians.com. We'd like to remind everyone that you can be part of a miracle by simply sharing our video challenge and help heal 10 disabled children. It's that easy. Just go to colorwithkindness.com, watch the video, and share it with your friends. Give these kids the gift of a lifetime. We'd like to thank everyone today for listening. You can join us at the Better Worlding community at betterworldians.com. And until next time, please be a better worldian.
Thank you again for helping make the world just a little bit better this week. Please join your hosts, Ray, Mary Sue, and Gregory Hansel next Thursday at 11 a.m. Eastern Time, 8 a.m. Pacific, on the Voice America Variety Channel. We hope we've inspired you to do one small thing to help make a big difference. Join us at betterworldians.com to tell us what you've done to change the world.
Thank you.
Thanks again for listening to the preceding program brought to you on the Voice America Variety Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericavariety.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the preceding program are strictly those of the host or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.